Hey there, and welcome to the Confident Woman Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Brooks. Join me as I sit down and chat with co-hosts, friends, and carefully curated guests and talk about all the things that empower you to become your best and most confident self. So let's get started. All right, ladies, welcome back. So today we have with us Deb Blum. Deb is the founder and guide for The Whole Soul Way, a 12-month experience. And she has had the experience of empowering and being a transformational coach for women for decades. I'm going to save that for Deb to share a little bit more about all the incredible works that she's done over the years and years, but also in her program and the things that she continues to do today. So welcome, Deb.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be here. Appreciate it. So let's see. You know, I'm going to just tell you a little bit about the Whole Soul Way program first.
Yeah, let's dive in. I know that your program is just incredible. And that's really how we kind of got on a tangent, started talking about it. I was like, oh, wait, hold on. We should hit record. But yes, all the things.
I started out as a health coach a long time ago. And over the years, I educated myself in different ways. I went to a life coach counseling program. I became a parent coach. And I worked one-on-one with women, and I did a lot of great work there. It was wonderful. And over the years, I also kept on educating myself in a variety of different ways and started to realize that I was getting a lot from group coaching programs that I didn't expect to get. In fact, when I was in group coaching programs in the beginning, I felt really intimidated by them. I felt uncomfortable with them, and I thought, this isn't for me. And then I stuck with them and realized that sometimes the best growth is in community and with other women. A lot of times I was in all gender groups, but I happen to work with only women in my program, anyone who identifies as a woman. And I find that the group model has been amazing. And so where I am now is that I have this program, and it is a 12-month experience, and it's about 6 months of actual training, like a self-paced journey where I teach women how to unhook from all of the stuff that has been holding us back, all of the things that we learned, all of the conditioning that says you need to act this way and follow these rules and live into these roles, and unhook from those, the programming from our childhood and the wounding and the baggage that we've been carrying around with us. I like to say, not only do we have this baggage in like a backpack that we're lugging around with us and it's weighing on our shoulders, but actually everything in that bag is there parts of us that we had to take out of us, like parts of us that we had to put into the bag, the backpack, and say, oh, don't be that way and don't be that way and follow the right rules. And so we're left with this emptiness inside of us, these holes inside of us. And what we're longing for is wholeness. And so I teach this process that is not just a one-time process, not just a couple of tips and tricks. It's actually a system that we can use over and over in order to learn how to continually deal with all that life throws at us in a way that makes us more whole over and over again. So we find each place in us where we feel emptiness, where we have wounding, where we are hurt, and we start to come back and literally reclaim our wholeness, reclaim connection to all of who we are, because I believe that part of the reason why so many of us are lacking confidence, so many of us aren't doing the things that we want to do, or we're stuck in relationships that really are feeling unfulfilling, but we don't know how to make them fulfilling again, is actually because deep down inside, we've lost connection to ourselves. And we're sort of seeking and longing and trying to grasp for things outside of us to fill up that hole. And then also because of that emptiness, we feel a sense of really not feeling safe in the world, feeling kind of what I would say untethered in the world. No matter what happens, it throws us off our game. Someone says something and we receive it as a personal slight. And then for 2 weeks, we're spinning out of control on that thing that happened instead of being able to receive it and then know exactly how to process it and still stay in our power. That's so amazing to be able to do that. And yet very few of us have ever learned that. So I want women to be able to come into wholeness. And I particularly work with women who are in that midlife time or older, where they're like, I have been living the first half of my life according to external expectations, doing all the things that I thought I was supposed to do. Everyone told me if I do all of these things, I'm going to be happy. And then I get there and I'm like, where am I? Who am I? What did I do? I'm the bridge between that way we were living to what I call the sacred second half. And the sacred second half is when we actually say, what does life expect from me? What does life want from me? What does my soul want for me? Where am I? What do I want to do in order to be able to live this second half in a way that I feel like I'm living it true to myself? I'm establishing the kinds of connections I want, where when I get to the end of my life, I'm not going to be at my deathbed saying, I really wish I lived true to myself. I really wish I allowed myself to be happy. I really wish I didn't work so hard. Just like I think you've probably heard of Bronnie Ware's book, The Five Regrets of the Dying. I don't want anyone to have to get to that point where they live that way. I don't want women to feel like they have to get a divorce in order to be happy. I don't want women to feel like they can't be their shining, bright, brilliant, amazing, effervescent self because they were told that they can't. And because the rules of being a woman are like, no, you need to play small. Don't intimidate anybody. Don't play too big. I want us to really be the fully expressed, amazing beings that our creator made us to be. And that's what the Whole Soul Way is all about. It's about going from holes to wholeness.
I love everything that you just said. I'm jotting down like all kinds of notes because this is really just speaking to me. And I feel like we can have such a beautiful conversation as how we can guide this, because a few things that came up. I mean, obviously, I really resonate with the holes leading to wholeness, because in my story, I came broken. I was just pieces and I was looking to be put back together whole. But what did wholeness even mean to me? And so that sent me on this quest of finding, you know, things to fill that hole. And it's like what you had said, from our perspective, we're looking from the inside out, and that's the world. We're asking the world, can you fill this void? I need this. And so how do we fill that? We're coming at it from a place of woundedness. Can you help me put a Band-Aid on this? And that's what we're asking. But we're not really, I almost think that, you know, pulling from my experience, it's like I didn't even have the insight and the awareness at that level to say, I don't want a Band-Aid anymore. I actually want to be healed. How do we heal this wound? And that sent me on this journey, which, you know, my book, Chasing Perfection, it's a journey of healing, fitness, and self-love. So much healing had to come from just my own inaptness because I didn't know who I was, but all I knew was the damages. And I looked at myself as this brokenness. So that's who I became. So if somebody said, well, who are you? I'm like, I don't know, I'm broken, I'm damaged, I'm used, abused, you know, throw me out. Like, I did not see value in me because of how the world or life, how that colored my lens and my perception of my own perceived value of worth. So I love that you brought all that up, because I can not only relate to that, but it's almost like I could still always go back and feel what I felt as that woman. And then you had mentioned, you know, losing connection with yourself, right? What if you didn't even know who you were to even have that connection? So we can lose the connection, but there's also that starting point of life, I didn't know who I was. And then as we grow and we're evolving, and just through life's experiences, age, maturity, wisdom, all these things, they're constantly refining us. So we start to address and ask ourselves again, who am I today? You mentioned about a second half of life. You don't have to be in your 40s, 50s, and 60s. You can change at any point in your life. And this is beautiful, where you get to reclaim that wholeness and that power to be you again. But the question is, who are you today? I love this. Continue on.
I'm like, well, I mean, you've already filled up half a page of my notes already. Well, what you said too, though, first of all, I think there are a lot of people who are starting to, at a younger age, have a midlife awakening. Some people call it a quarter life awakening, but they're... And that's why I don't like to put dates and times or years, because it really is. I really do think that it's available to all of us. Maybe it's even available for, if we really understand this, maybe we wouldn't ever lose ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, if we understood this in grade school, maybe if parents understood it better, they wouldn't ever put their children in a situation where they have to abandon themselves. Dr. Gabor Mate talks about this concept. We have two primary needs. Our primary needs are breathing, food, those things, right? I like the way he talks about it, because it's the concept of the need for acceptance and the need for autonomy. Most children, when in a situation, will choose their parents or their primary caregiver's acceptance over their autonomy any day. They won't even know they're doing it. They're not going to make a conscious decision. But survival will always trump everything. And survival in a child, for a child, is to be accepted and loved by their parents, their primary caregivers, even their teachers, even their siblings, their people in their space. And so if these big people tell them that something isn't okay, they will try to conform themselves to fit, you know, to adapt to their environment. And these adaptations that we have as children are really resourceful. They're actually super resourceful. And I don't want anyone to feel like they're awful, bad people because they learned how to cope and they abandoned themselves as children. I really believe that it was highly resourceful, and it might even just be the way that it goes. If you look at Carl Jung, he says that the first 40 years of your life is just research and life starts after that. And he is a big believer in the concept that the first half of your life is egoically driven, meaning you almost need those years so that you can do things like get your foundation, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You have to get your basic needs met. Do you have a place to live? And do you have an ability to make some money? And do you have some drive for a career? And our drive for, say, like to partner, and our drive perhaps to procreate, these types of things, a lot of them are biological in those first 40 years. And so to me, a lot of this is not shaming anything that's happened in those first 40 years. Because it could be 20 years, but those first up to 50, 60 years, because part of it's our culture, part of it's our biology. And so I like to say to people, the beauty is in the moment when you realize you don't want to live that way anymore. It's not like, oh, but I wish I hadn't been living that way before. It's more like, oh, I'm so blessed. I didn't die. I didn't get to my deathbed and figure it out. Like, I might have 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years left to be able to unhook from all of that. Because one of the problems we have is we are so hard on ourselves. So if we look back and we say, I wish I had known this earlier, you didn't. It's okay. One day you woke up and you realize you don't want to live this way anymore. Well, what happened in that time pre you realizing it is this fragmentation. It is this time when we basically get holes in ourselves because we unconsciously went down the path of acceptance rather than autonomy, being like, I am a sovereign true being who lives true to myself. We said, oh, you know what? Mommy and daddy don't like when I do that. Okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. Oh, daddy doesn't like it when I sing. Okay, I don't ever want to sing. So we cut off from these parts of ourselves that are not necessarily bad. They could be wonderful, amazing parts. A lot of them are our power. Maybe we cut off from our anger. Maybe we cut off from our, you know, speaking what's true for us. And all those things get stuck in that backpack I was talking about. And when they're weighing us down and we're feeling a sense of fragmentation and emptiness inside of us. So think about like a piece of paper. If you went in and you used a hole puncher and you punched a whole bunch of holes in it, that piece of paper is going to be very fragile. It's going to feel like if you try to put something on that, it's going to just rip. It's going to fall apart. That's what a lot of us are feeling, a sense of like just being disconnected, a sense that when someone does something or says something, we feel kind of fragile. We get broken by it really easily. We feel kind of wounded and not as strong. That's because of all the things that have happened. But the cool thing is we can reclaim ourselves. We can reclaim that wholeness. That is not a thing that we have to live with for the rest of our lives. We can come in and take care of all of those. We can shore up those holes, fill them up, and come into wholeness. And it's not as hard as we think. I think the hardest part is that we're given a bunch of superficial ways to do it that don't work. And then we get demoralized and defeated and we feel like there's no hope because nobody's really teaching us this. I mean, I am, but I'm teaching it. You're teaching it, but a lot of people aren't teaching this. So you don't learn it in elementary school. You don't learn it in college. You don't even really learn it on YouTube. You really learn it only when you have somebody who can take you from where you are now as like a guide and a Sherpa to a new way of living, a new way of doing life.
I love that you brought up how it's being guided. And that, I think, you know, before we hit record, we were just talking about a few ideas. One of the things that came up was about this I don't want to call it this way, but I'm going to just for the sake of this example. It's almost like that toxic positivity culture, but applicable to self-help and self-improvement. Just like we hear about it in the diet culture, we hear about it in, you know, different various forms and different subsects and whatnot. But I think that you're really hitting home, especially when it comes to self-improvement. You know, we talk about personal growth, self-improvement, self-help. That's the whole, it's a whole different genre where people are grabbing books and podcasts. And, you know, listen, I'm throwing myself into here too, because even like I have a book that is memoir / self-help. It was a hybrid that really didn't fit into either category because I didn't know how to, because I don't fit in boxes, just who I am. But, and now I also have a podcast that pick a category and it's self-improvement, because everything that we create and share is intentional to help guide that individual to a different level in their life. And I think that when you mentioned having a guide and a Sherpa, that's different than me putting out, for example, a self-help book that said, here are the 10 ways to find, you know, your, I don't know, I couldn't even make up one on the fly here, but let's just say, here are the 10 secrets to live in the life of your destiny. And it's like, what would I put in that content? It would just be all these cliche things and empty-handed promises and things that would be like, do this, do that, do this. That's what I think that we're kind of alluding here, is that there's this toxic culture that is pushing more things onto your already overwhelmed plate because you're already wounded. You have these brittle holes. You barely carry the weight of just everyday living. And now you need something else wrong with you because you got to do these 10 secrets because that's the way to find, you know, the life that you want. So I'm trying, you know, it's just role plays, but that's what I'm getting at. And I think that you're alluding to that as well. And I take into consideration because I never, even in the copy and content that I create, I'm very intentional. I will never put something like that out there because I know the imprint and the impact it could leave on somebody who is in that broken, fragile state where they already said, well, I'm already not doing enough anyway. Or you've given me 10, I was doing 5. I don't even have the bandwidth or the capacity to do another 5. And so it can ding on that perceived value of worth, but also they're operating out of exhaustion, burnout, because there's so many rules and things that we have to do that are said out there. But at the end of the day, you're like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do. So maybe I just won't do anything. And maybe that's where that lackadaisical approach comes in, where we don't see people as ambitious when it comes to taking care of themselves because they don't know how. It's all this misinformation. There's so much noise out there. So how do we? And I'd love to hear your take on this. This is obviously striking a chord with me, but I think it's coming from a place of personal experience, but also as part of my due diligence in the work and the content that I create. So I want to thank you for bringing this to light.
Yeah. Yes. And by the way, where we are in our journey, it's okay. Like, because you and I were both, I was in the journey of consuming. Mm-hmm. That might be a necessary, it's sort of like the, you know, like it might be necessary to have an egoic way of living before we can move to self-actualization. Mm-hmm. It might be the same thing. It might be self-improvement is the beginning steps of transitioning into self-acceptance. It might be that we notice something is wrong, something feels off, and we're like, I have, my skin doesn't fit anymore. Something doesn't feel right. I'm not happy. I don't feel fulfilled. I'm dissatisfied. Something's empty. I'm longing. And the only thing we know, because the only thing we're taught, is to seek outside of ourselves. And so the first steps we have to take sometimes are to seek outside of ourselves, but for healthier stuff. Where maybe before we were reaching for food or reaching for, you know, a beer, maybe now we're like, or a glass of wine, maybe now we're like, oh, I'm going to sit down and read this self-help book. I'm going to consume a bunch of podcasts. I mean, because that is what then starts to open up other possibilities for us. But what I think you and I are talking about is what's possible when you start to tap into your own wisdom, your own ability to become whole within. And that's part of why one of the things I do is teach women how to do this work for themselves, because I want them to become their own coach, their own healer, their own leader. And so I'm a more process-oriented person rather than a goal-oriented person, in the sense of I'm not telling you this is going to be what happens for you. I'm telling you what you're going to be able to know how to do when you're done with this program and how you're going to feel differently. And I think that what you're saying is, in some ways, what we don't know is how to build the foundational item, the foundational pieces. So we're trying to solve problems by fixing what we think are broken pieces of us on this surface level thing. But the reality is we needed to come from underneath and do this inside out thing where we say, why am I doing what I'm doing? So instead of me saying to myself, oh my God, I can't believe you just ate that thing again. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, you just did it again. Or why did you just say that way? Or, oh, you know, instead of that, or instead of, oh my God, that person's so awful. Like, why did they say that to me? They're so mean. They're so disrespectful. What we then want to go to is, wait a second, but why did I end up in the pantry? What happened before that? What was I feeling? And then we can have compassion for ourselves. Or, oh, look at me taking it personally that person said that thing. Oh, I wonder why they took that so personally. And then again, we can have compassion rather than beating ourselves up or beating up another person. We get to go to the layer under it. Mm-hmm. And so people talk about self-compassion. A lot of people will say things like, well, I am compassionate for like that I ate food or I did this. And I'm like, no, but the part that needs the compassion is the part of you that underneath it that felt the compulsion toward it or felt the reaction toward that. And so then it's like, how do we come in and start to say, there's not a rule book to this. It's just, well, what would you say to your friend who was sitting there across the table from you and just felt that way? You might say, oh, you know, I wonder why you ended up in the pantry. Did something happen before that? What my husband and I like to say is that the thing is never the thing. Exactly. The thing is never the thing. So whatever we think it is, you got to be a detective. Same with like, if you have children, when your kids are acting out or whatever, they're almost always acting out. We act out things that we haven't processed and we haven't metabolized and we haven't put words to. So when we act out our anger, it's because we probably haven't allowed ourselves to actually face our anger, feel our anger, allow us to understand our anger. So anger becomes a projection out into the world, and we act it out to others or we act it in toward ourselves. Same with any of our things that we have. We either play them out in behaviors or we go into them and we actually face them. Mm-hmm. You know, and then we wonder why, oh, like I'm sabotaging myself. Oh, I keep, you know, playing out the same unhealthy pattern. Well, it's not because you're absolutely 100% normal. It's what every human does until we realize that there is a real good reason why you do what you do. And we start to go to that level. That's where the magic is. That's the magic. And that's where we can have compassion. That's where we can do inquiry. That's where we can heal. That's where we can come into wholeness. Because we never got compassion for those things. Those are probably places in us that we never received the love, the compassion, the care that we needed as children. And we can do that for ourselves.
Yes, I love that you brought this full circle, because that's where I was going with the whole conversation. And it's I think for us as consumers, we're consumers of this world. We take in a lot of information, but there's no really filtration process to turn the information into knowledge as applied action. And that's how you start to sort through what is and isn't for you at this point. Because we're consumers, like I said. I mean, we're consumers of social media. We get all these tips. We get, you know, subscribe to emails. We get more tips. And then we're watching a YouTube with more tips. And then we're on this other social media platform with these tips. And we're just consumer. And it's very overwhelming.
Yes.
But if we don't have that awareness that says, I'm cautiously consuming with the intent, and this is actually what I'm trying to seek and find so that I can now get to that different layer or that depth so I can heal or address or minimize whatever that is. That's the whole concept of where I was going with. If we start consuming without intention, we're going to feel overwhelmed. We're going to feel like we're spiraling more out of control than we are in control of our own lives, digesting and essentially that whole concept of you are what you eat, you are what you consume.
Yes.
Consuming, and we don't discard it in ways that feel healthy. So we start piling that into our backpack. We start carrying that around as well. So it becomes heavier. We're going through already that paper analogy, cold plunged all the way through, carrying this heavy backpack. And eventually that paper is just going to rip. And that's where we could find ourselves if we don't get ahead of that. And that comes back to a lot of the work that you do. So the authenticity is really where you get to be who you are. And there's just being with freedom. And there is no pressure to become something other than what feels right for you as your true self. And a lot of things that you were talking about, I'm kind of bringing in a couple different books that I've recently read, and it really speaks about the thinking mind, like the narration, so your thinking mind and your observer mind. And that I thought was interesting. So I'm reading another book by Michael A. Singer, which first of all, I love his book, Untethered Soul. And then this other one is called The Life's Experience of Perfection or something like that. So obviously, you know, spoke to me because I'm a perfectionist. Recovering, that is. And and it just really spoke to my soul because it's like, how many times do we catch ourselves in the act of thinking instead of the act of awareness? Like, we don't have to act on everything we think, but what if we can hear the narration before we start acting on impulse? So using the example, you know, you find yourself wandering to the pantry and you blindly just, you're on autopilot and you grab the bag of chips or the gummy bears or whatever is in the pantry and you're eating it until that awareness hits, you're like, oh my gosh, I did it again.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we can beat ourselves up for going to the same place that causes us more pain and damage than the pain and damage we're actually trying to heal. So you can have that thinking mind that says, well, hold up. I know we're about to do that, but do you remember where it leads us? And now the thinking mind sets in with the emotions and it's like a check-in and the emotions like, yeah, but I'm really lonely. I'm depressed. Okay, great. But that's not a means to better the depression or the loneliness. And it's like, you can have this whole conversation because we know that voice and narration, we could hear it a mile away, but the minute another voice creeps in, you're like, oh, well, who are you? Who brought you to the party? And that's the whole concept of like awareness, I think.
Yeah. And you mentioned something. I just wanted to say, I do think that Gabor Mate does say authenticity and acceptance, not autonomy. So
yeah. And so one thing that's challenging that I see is that part where you talked about like when you're in the pantry and being able to catch yourself. That's the part that I think is really most challenging for people, is that there's the stimulus and then there's the response. Like what Viktor Frankl talks about, you know, between stimulus and response, there's a place, and that's your chance to choose. The problem that we have is that most people start off very unaware of that. We don't actually notice until we're either in the middle of it or after we've done it or even a week later at night when we're laying in bed. So what we're trying to do is increase the space between that emotion that came up and our own biological, physiological reaction to that. And so what will happen is usually most people aren't even going to catch that they felt sadness before they ended up in the pantry. They're just going to be in the pantry or on the couch now eating it. And then maybe in retrospect, they can see it. And I think that's why it's so important. I like to say that there are three key pieces to sustainable healing. And one of them is, I call it the cha-cha, because you have to dance with it. It's a dance. It's not like a linear path. But C is building capacity. H is deep healing. And A is new action. What a lot of people try to do is take action at the level of basically self-improvement, self-flagellation, shooting on ourselves, trying to implement new thing that we saw on TikTok, diet culture, all those. It's at that level of like fixing ourselves, right? And so we're trying to take new action. And we don't have a foundation really to do that on. And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. It's only
wrong if you aren't able to do it. And then you get yourself into this cycle where you beat yourself up all the time. Because if it's actually working for you, some people are incredibly good at, they're just super disciplined people. And I don't want to steal from people that if you're super disciplined and you're able to do that, it might work for you forever. I used to be really good at, if I wanted to diet, I could be on a really good diet and eat and exercise regime for 6 months. I was super disciplined. You know what? For that time period, that served me well. I learned a lot about exercise. I learned a lot about healthy eating. It was good. Was it sustainable for me? No. Because if you don't have all three of these, you don't actually get sustainable change. So then what happens is when we do these things and then we fail, quote, fail, even though I still believe everything is an incremental growth, even if it like a failure, it's still there's, you could always look back and be like, yeah, but I learned this, or yeah, but it changed me in this way, or yeah, but I learned not to do that, you know? So there's something we learned. So what happens though is that by quote failing, we lower our capacity. What that means is like we basically we feel defeated, we feel beaten down. It steals our energy. So then we're basically starting in this place of low capacity to do other things. So then we are more likely to say binge. I mean, we happen to be talking about this thing here right now, or to react to our children, or to be impatient, or to make a mistake on a business thing that we really needed to do a good job of or something. So that's why building capacity is so important. And capacity is all the things we do. You could say some of it is self-care. Some of it's nervous system regulation. It could be the places where you make sure you do get good sleep. We know that if people don't get good sleep, we know sleep is so foundational that if you don't get good sleep, you will actually be more impatient. You will eat more sugar. You will not feel as energized. You probably won't go to the gym. It's a cascading thing. So we want to start with build capacity, which is all of those things that we do that help us to feel like we have the capacity to meet the day in a way that we feel centered, empowered, and we feel good about ourselves. Now, again, each of these affects one another. Because if you take action and do have a positive experience, that can build your capacity. If you build your capacity, you might have more willpower to actually make changes. Now, in between the two of them is healing. But did we really go to the part of us that actually felt sad and lonely and actually investigated that and didn't just say that's, oh, the reason why I'm sad and lonely is because I don't have a partner? Or the reason I'm sad and lonely is because my friends are all out of town and I don't have anyone to go out with? No, that's not why you're sad and lonely. That's the good excuse for it. You can give a rationalization for everything. But no, the reason why you're sad and lonely, the reason why you hurt feelings, the reason why you got reactive, those are all related to attachment wounding, relationship wounding, childhood hurts, big T traumas, little T traumas, whatever you want to call them. All the ways that you didn't get your needs met as a child, all the ways that we got hurt. And most people will say it's in the first 7 years of our life that almost all of that wounding happens. And it's not like people did it on purpose. Mom and dad just had their own issues. It might have been as simple as you asked your brother to play and he told me, I don't like to play with girls. And somehow you decided that, you know, being a girl is bad. And now you've carried that with you for the rest of your life. It might have been that you were dancing, playing, singing. Your dad walked in, put his finger to his lips and said, shh. And you felt shame. And the minute that you felt shame, then you decided, I don't think I'm ever going to dance and play and sing ever again. And now you decided that you're a person who doesn't do any of that stuff, but actually inside there's a like an inner dancer and singer that's like yearning to be out and just dance and sing in your house. And so you're feeling emptiness around it. It doesn't have to be negative. It doesn't have to be bad stuff, but it can be. It can be also that. Can be anger. Can be disrespect in the form of you speaking your opinion. And mommy and daddy told you, don't be disrespectful. Don't talk back to me. Right? You could have all these things, little tiny micro moments in our lives. And guess what? They all accumulated and became baggage. And now we get to go through. And by the way, the other cool thing is you don't have to go through every one of them. If you unravel one, it starts to unravel the other. If you feel more wholeness in one area, your capacity increases. Now you're able to navigate the next situation better and feel more proud. If you do the cha-cha over and over again, you literally create sustainable change inside of yourself, because that healing makes new change not only easier,
But you're going to make the change that's right for you, not the change that the TikTok person or the Instagram influencer told you to make. But you're not going to say, oh, I need to be on keto diet. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, like I know myself so much better. I actually feel into my body because I'm attached to my body. I'm connected to myself. I actually hear my intuition. I hear my inner truth. And now I take not just new action, but personally aligned new action. I know how to have that conversation with a person where I can hold on to myself and honor them at the same time, instead of choosing me over them or them over me. These are things that we do ideally from the inside out. But there's no wrong way to go. There's no wrong entry point. But if you're only doing one, if you notice yourself being like, I do a lot of inner work, I do a lot of healing work, but I'm still stuck in these patterns, you're probably not doing one of those three pieces. One of them scares you, or maybe you do a lot of healing work, but you never take aligned action. You heal, and then you feel like, I can no longer be in that relationship and suppress my voice anymore. But to speak your voice is scary because that person's never heard your voice. You've always been the flexible one that accommodated everybody. And now all of a sudden you're going to come in with an opinion and you're scared to death of how that person's going to react. Because guess what? You have old wounding that tells you that you should not stand up for yourself and you shouldn't speak up for yourself. But then you do it and you realize you didn't die. You realize you didn't die, and that gives validation that you healed and it builds your capacity and you are a changed person from it. So that's my cha-cha.
I love this. I'm over here just like, so many, you guys almost have to like go back and rewind us and listen to this again. Because everything that you shared was just so relatable, but also very practical and simple. The way you explained it, it was just, yeah, we're always doing a dance with life. We're doing a dance with partners. We're doing a dance in relationships.
Yeah.
And you have this relationship with yourself. Why are we stepping out of this relationship and not doing the dance, but we're trying to do the cha-cha in other means, but that's not what's actually healing us and resolving those issues in there. It's almost like you're stepping outside of your relationship to go do the thing that the relationship itself has been begging you to come to and be a part of. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, don't you think that people, okay, so tell me what you think about this, but I kind of feel like it's because we look at other people as the person who we want to do these things for us. Like we're looking for them to fulfill these things in us. As a child, you didn't get your needs met. Plain and simple, very few of us did, no matter even if you had amazing parents. And so when we come into adult relationships, we're actually looking for them to fulfill those unmet childhood needs. It's hard because you don't want to think about that you're with your partner and you wanting your husband to be your daddy. But in some ways, we're looking for our partners to be our mommy and our daddy and to be the person who makes us feel loved and validates us and cuddles us and knows exactly what to say and knows exactly how to help us and all of those things when actually the real source of that is us. I say that once you become an adult, I know it's disappointing, but we are the only ones that can grow ourselves up. And that's why I teach reparenting of your inner child, because I say you look back at your inner child and you say, okay, I'm here. I'm here to give you the things you didn't get. I think what we do is we often turn away from ourselves. So imagine if I'm here and I want my husband to do something for me. Inside me is a little girl. And she is right here looking out with me. We're together. And she wants us to turn around and give her a hug. But we don't do that. Mm-hmm. We look to somebody else to give us a hug. Mm-hmm. So we're disappointed and saddened about something. And we turn around and we say, somebody else needs to console us. Now, believe me, I am a big believer in relationships. I'm highly committed, like I'm a diehard about making my relationships work. So it's not that I don't believe in relationships, but I believe that it's very hard to have the kinds of relationships we want with other people if we don't have the relationship with ourselves that we want. And we're often looking for somebody else to love us and do these things. In fact, one of the things I offer to people as one of the most amazing tools you can ever use is your dominant hand, whatever your dominant hand is, think of it as like a parent, and then your heart or your belly or someplace on your body. I like the heart. And to basically on a daily basis, when you're driving in the car or you're sitting on the toilet or you're reading a book or you're listening to a meditation, you actually put your hand on your heart and you say, I'm here. I'm with you. You're not alone. We're in this together. And you start to build this relationship with some, I don't care. I like the inner child because it gives me some, a concrete thing to think about. And you put your hand on your heart or your hand on your belly or your arms around yourself. And you're like, I'm with you. You're not alone. Because that's what we feel. We feel untethered. We feel alone. And you know who's feeling it? It's actually the young parts of us. The young part who hasn't realized that there's an adult us. You talked about a witness, observer. We can become, we can step in as the adult, the parent, the one that's observing what's happening. Oh, I'm feeling really reactive right now. Oh, I'm in a pantry. Oh, I'm feeling sad. And you know what? The deeper we can go to the surface of, I want food. That's going to make me feel better. Oh, of course you want food. That's what you always did. That's what we do. It feels good. It feels soothing. It feels good in the moment, but it's not going to feel good for the long run. Like you said, maybe says, I'm never going to get love. The only thing that is ever going to make you feel better is food. And that's a protector part of you. It's like, nobody else is going to love you that way. You know, you realized it. You saw it. Nobody does. So let's just take care of ourselves in this way. This is the way we can love ourselves with Cheetos. You know, Cheetos filled us. But then you go, oh, am I willing to go one layer deeper?
Oh,
there's that little girl who actually felt unloved. And then guess who needs to love her?
You.
Me, right? I need to love her the way she needed. I need to step in as the mom and dad that I needed and wanted as a child. Now, in my 70-year-old life, in my 20-year-old life, whenever it is we realize it, we are, our parents missed the mark. We have to come into acceptance of it. And then we get to grow up and become the emotionally and spiritually whole and mature women that we are meant to be. We just didn't know. We didn't know, but now we do.
Right. And that's, you know, really, it's our job to parent ourselves. And I think that, you know, coming from my own experience, it was like, you know, as you're going through this journey and there's going to be a lot of unpacking, there's going to be a lot of emotions, things that I didn't even know existed, because I think I operate only up from like two emotions, like angry and like angrier or something.
Yes. I was angry and irritable or angry and frustrated or something.
You know, it's like we operate out of those two modalities. Like, that's all we kind of knew. My mom didn't do that. My dad didn't do that. And it's like, sure, we can point the blame, but how long are we going to hold them in contempt for all these years when we're the ones still being a prisoner of this own story? It's like we have to set ourselves free. And how we do that a lot when you talk about self-compassion, to add on to that, I'm going to throw on another layer, which is self-forgiveness. We have to forgive, you know, when we, and not even just of self-forgiveness, but forgiveness entirely. Forgiveness is a blanket that we get to gift, and forgiving our parents for not meeting those needs, but they didn't know what they didn't know. We didn't have the words to explain that. They were also going through their own things. And as the more you grow up, you realize, okay, you're in your 30s, your 40s, your 50s. You're like, yeah, I'm like the same age as my parents when I was mad at my parents for not being that. So if you think of you in that shoe today, you're like, yeah, I didn't know, or I couldn't think of that. But then also, as you said, we're a whole different generation now where we're actually doing the work instead of carrying it with us for the rest of our lives. So it's up to us to heal that damage and woundedness. And to add on another book to that is emotional, can't think of it, the title of it, but it's Emotional Parents.
Emotionally Immature Parents or something?
Yeah,
like
something like that. But I remember reading that and I was just like, you know what? Yeah, that spoke about my father or my mother. And I'm like, oh, and that was both of them. But then I realized I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But not even from a place of parent to child. I'm doing the same to my inner child. And so we could still learn these lessons years after, and giving that sense of forgiveness is like, listen, if I'm 40 something and my father was 40 something, we look at that now, I'm like, okay,
I have almost the same mind and the insight. So I have to forgive what he couldn't have known, but I know better, so I could do better. And that's the forgiveness. But then also that sense of self-compassion or self-forgiveness, because how many times now do we beat ourselves up for carrying the weight and the shame of something that was done to us or hadn't been given to us? And we beat ourselves up for that. So forgiveness is just really a key to set yourself free, whether it was something that was done to you that could be horrific and traumatizing. We're not giving a pass or, you know, letting that person off the hook. We're letting ourselves feel so we can set ourselves free and heal. And there's that whole concept of, you know, when you're able to set yourself free, that's where compassion and healing is able to come on. And because, as you said, Deb, it's about the attachment and how we're carrying all these things with us in this backpack that we essentially have to just pick out and sift through. And that's the scary part, because we got to face those demons and skeletons and the secrets, the shame, the lies, all that stuff that we've been carrying around, which is just so dang heavy. Like, I didn't have a backpack. I had a U-Haul.
Yeah.
The longer we go, the heavier it gets, and the more stuff we keep piling and packing away, thinking that we'll just ignore it. It'll go away on itself. It will always show up. And as you said, in those shadow works. So, oh my gosh, we've unpacked, yes, pun intended, a lot this episode. So, Deb, as we start to wrap things up, I would love for you to pull everything together, give a few last remarks or things that you want to share, and then some of the takeaways that our listeners are. So, Deb, please.
One thing that might help a little bit is that if people go to thewholesoulway.com/triggers, some of the details about the cha-cha are in there. So people can go get that. That will help on the note piece of things, and it'll save some time. Well, I mean, you just talked about something really powerful, and I think that self-compassion and self-forgiveness are some very difficult things for all of us. And I think that forgiving our parents, it's hard, and we never want to forgive before we're really ready. It's more of a process, is my experience. And I like to call it, we're cycle breakers, and we're breaking the cycles of our generations of the past. And our parents they inherited their traumas and their own wounding and their baggage. And back then, there wasn't a lot of context or opportunity to do the healing work that we are able to do now. And maybe we could even call it, we're privileged to do now, that we have the space and the knowledge and the people, the guides, to be able to guide us through this process. And I think that back in like our parents' generation and the generations before that, the generation before that, they were in war, in war times. Our parents' generation, for a lot of us, you know, they were in okay times, maybe even good times. And sometimes in good times, we don't feel the need to do some of these things. And, you know, the truth of the matter is our baggage can not be seen by us for a long time. Like, I know for me, it wasn't until I was 38 years old that I had this like clue, a little clue that I had baggage, and I knew I had trauma from my childhood, but I didn't actually feel it until I was about 37, 38 years old. And I started to go, oh my God, what is going on? Who is this person living this life and what's going on? But what I am hearing us really kind of come full circle around is that when you do notice it, and when you realize that you're carrying a U-Haul behind you and you don't want to carry it anymore, one of the things that we will meet up against at some point is forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And another one is self-compassion. And I would like people to meet self-compassion sooner rather than later, because it leads to forgiveness. And if there was one thing I could really emphasize around self-compassion, is that self-compassion isn't something that you have to earn through your behaviors. Self-compassion is something that you can give to yourself for the reasons why you do the things you do. And I know I said that earlier, but I just want to emphasize it, because to me, we're so hard on ourselves. And I say to people in my group, they'll say, well, I can't find compassion for that. And I say, well, then be compassionate to the part of you that can't be compassionate yet. Have compassion for your limitations. Have compassion for the you that felt the need to do something to make yourself feel better, to cope with that difficult situation. A lot of what we're talking about here is coping, which, by the way, there is another thing that people can do if they want to, which is go to my website, to thewholesoulway.com/quiz. It's an inner child quiz to identify your primary way that your inner child learned to cope with your circumstances. And then a whole bunch of really good information about what that means for your life right now, that you're using that coping mechanism. So when we learn to cope, we have to have compassion for the coping. Because the reason why we're coping is because something happened that was too much for us to bear in childhood, and then there's still too much for us to bear now. And I also want to say one last thing. Forgiveness is a funny thing, because I truly wholeheartedly believe that we are free when we forgive. I really believe that. And I also understand how hard it is for people. I just wanted to have compassion for how hard it is to forgive. That forgiveness is something we don't want to forget to do, because it's freeing for ourselves to forgive ourselves, to forgive others. We have to grieve that people disappoint us. We have to grieve that the other person in your relationship is also a wounded, flawed human with their own baggage. And that when we can start to say, oh my gosh, that's all of us, we then can be more gentle with ourselves, but we can also be more gentle with others and realize, like, we are really doing the best we can. We might have limitations. We might not be doing what we want to be doing, but I'm going to guess that most of us are doing the best we can with the information and the maturity and the emotional knowledge as we possibly can. I really believe that wholeheartedly. And I think that we need a lot more gentleness, a lot more self-acceptance, way less harsh brutality toward ourselves. And, you know, you talked about that voice that you hear in you that is the voice that your parents had. Well, it's called introjection. Mm-hmm. And one of the best ways we can know how we're treating ourselves is to look back at the way we were treated as a child and have so much compassion for why we do that, even why we're beating up ourselves. We just want to do the best. We have the best of intentions. We don't know better yet, but we're doing amazing. As a society, we are healing. We are changing the world. And I believe that this is what needs to be done to change the trajectory of the future of humanity. Love ourselves first. Create more peace inside of ourselves first. Stop oppressing ourselves. Stop the war inside. And then I think we will really start to change the outside world. How I'll leave it.
Beautifully said. I mean, you wrapped that up so perfectly. And yes, I mean, everything that you shared, all the links, everything will be in the show notes below. This was one of our deeper conversations. So thank you for going to the depths with me, taking it a little bit wider. These are places that I love to just be and explore. So I want to thank you for spending your time with me and gifting our listeners with such depth and allowing them to hopefully see beyond their circumstances, beyond where they're at today, and know that there's hope and encouragement in whatever season we find ourselves in, because there's always light on the other side of darkness. We just have to believe it and keep going.
Thank you so much. It has been a true honor and so much fun.
Thank you.
Hey there. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Confident Woman Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did, please be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. Thanks again for listening.